This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at an employees seminar held on March 18, 2026 in Millersburg, Ohio.
Good morning. It is refreshing to see a crowd like this that is here for, I'm assuming, more than just donuts. I want to echo what Ivan mentioned about what shall we do with the blessings that God has given us. And that's sort of a resonating theme here for my subject, which is maintaining a modest lifestyle. And I'd just like to plug in a little bit that what I'm referring to is a modest lifestyle in prosperity. I'm focusing on what I perceive to be the generation we're living in and the society that we're living in this day and age is prosperity. We are a prosperous, blessed people. I don't come with a prescribed recipe, clear-cut, what modest lifestyle is. I really don't. But I want to stimulate your heart. In our weddings, our ministry refer to 1 Peter 3:3-4, where it refers to the wife or the woman not adorning herself with jewelry and a plaiting of hair, but of the hidden man of the heart. And I'd like to be speaking to the hidden man of the heart, the inner being of whether it's a man or a woman that brings out what I call a modest lifestyle. Lifestyle is a term that I think I've used. I'm not sure if the committee picked this term or this word, but I want to define a little bit what I mean by lifestyle. The lifestyle you choose, it's the style that in which you choose to live, and that is your choice. Your lifestyle is yours. Specifically yours. It comes from your choice. It's not your church choice or your church code. It's not your work ethics or the business code, but it's the choice you're making. You're making a style of how you're going to live, and it starts in your heart. And so today we are specifically at an AF seminar. But the name AFs comes from the Anabaptists, which is being specific to a group of people, and it's specifically conservative Anabaptists. I heard a minister say just recently that there are those who believe there is a God, and then there are those who say, I believe in God, but we set out to obey God. So there's a difference. Believing there is a God and saying, I believe God, but then to live it out. And that's where I want to tie that in with obedience, to live in obedience to Christ. I want to break this out into three points. The first point is, where did we come from? Our history. And the second one is, where are we at today? What are we faced with today? What are the circumstances and the world around us that we find ourselves in? And where are we going? So those are the three points that I'd like to come out with in addressing maintaining a modest lifestyle. Where did we come from? Where did we come from? I would assume that most of you here, if you go back to your ancestors, you're Swiss Anabaptists. You're from Switzerland. Your forefathers probably came from Switzerland. Now, I don't want anybody to think that if their ancestors didn't come from Switzerland that they're in the wrong crowd. I'm not implying that whatsoever. The reason I like to give a little history here, I'm not a historian, but I get a lot of my history information from a local man called Amos Hoover, who's an archivist at the Muddy Creek Farm Library. So bear with me on the facts. I'm also a believer that if you don't know history, you're going to repeat it. So I that's why I like to go back to see who, to remind us who we are. So if Going back to our history, Swiss Anabaptists made some faith commitments that were not focused on prosperity. They made some choices that had nothing to do with money. I shouldn't say nothing to do with money, but it wasn't focused on prosperity. And they knew that by being rebaptized as adults could cause persecution. Not only that, they knew if they don't baptize their babies, they were in violation of the state church code, and they had to pay a price. They knew that this choice they're making could result in persecution. One of the first things that had happened, their goods were confiscated. Now, you know, I don't know how that transpired, but I'm assuming that in our day and age, the state would come in, and the church leaders would come in, and they'd have public auctions, sell your stuff because you didn't comply, pay the price. Being exiled, that means sent out of the country, even martyred. That means, if you think about, we celebrated the Anabaptist history that being about 500 years old, and that's a rough estimation. When a few brothers decided by reading the scripture that they decided that they need to make a choice to follow Jesus and were baptized as adults. After generations of being exiled or goods confiscated or being persecuted, they were poor. They did not have resources. And I'm specifically thinking about the case where the Swiss Anabaptists were persecuted. So in that case, some of them were invited to Germany to live on the Palatinate, where there was the devastation of 30 years of war. And that's where our forefathers learned their skills or developed their skills of agriculture. And without getting specific about that, they learned that if you feed the soil, and that's where our lime idea of putting lime in, sweetening the soil, I'm told, was developed, and they brought that with them. Now, what was happening was there was a Quaker evangelist who came and offered to these persecuted people a land in what we call Pennsylvania, and was called Penn's Woods, and said they can come there, settle this wooded land, this wild land, and they can worship freely. And this became attractive. Now, I'm going to give you a little history about my Burkholder history, not that it's anything special, but I did deliberately study it to get an understanding of what my four ancestors went through to bring me where I'm at in Pennsylvania. I still live in Pennsylvania. Christian Burkholder in 1754, by his father, was told, his father was a bishop, said, "There's no future for my family here. Son, take your family, go to the new land." Well, that was quite a stretch. This Christian Burkholder had six children, three boys, three girls, and he was in the Palatinate, and he decided to make the trip. He started the trip, he got a splinter in his finger, developed infection, and before he died, he told his widowed wife, to be widowed, that go. Don't go home. Go to the new land. The Lord be with you. And she did. That trip would have taken about 9 months from the Palatinate to the new land. She had to find her way down the Rhine River to Rotterdam, Holland, get a ship and sail the ocean, and then have someone on the other end pick them up or help them get situated. So to do that, and this may not be the history in all of us, the Dutch Mennonites were living in Holland. They weren't as persecuted, and they were wealthy. And they had reached out to these poor people and said they'll fund the trip. So they subsidized those costs of those trips from a boat to the Rhine River, to the dock, to the ship, to Philadelphia or Germantown. And so the Dutch funded that. And some people in that case got the trip funded part of the way, but the ship captain wasn't paid. At the end of the journey, the captain wanted his money, and usually they indentured themselves. Someone hired them, paid the captain, and they worked for so many years. Now, I don't know where my... I think they might have been indentured. They came to Germantown, got off the ship, and there they met Hans Groff, or Daniel Groff, who brought them to the new land. So they were poor. They depended on the wealthy Dutch, who were very wealthy. Now, I do want to tell you a little something here that I want to teach you a new word. The Dutch Mennonites were also a conservative people and also shared the same values as us Mennonites, German Baptists, and Amish. And today, you can't find them in Holland. They become what I call acculturated. And that's a word I'd like you to remember. Acculturated means that there's a subculture, a smaller culture, within a larger culture. And that's where we find ourselves today. We are living in a culture, a smaller culture, although this room is big and there's a lot of people here. I know your community isn't all here, and you might think that's a large culture. It is. But when you are in a larger culture, like in America, there's that pressure to become acculturated, to just slowly bleed in to the culture that is around you. That's what happened to the Dutch Mennonites. The wealthy Dutch Mennonites. So, okay, they end up in America, 1700 to 1755. Many 1700 to 1755. Many families came to America as poor immigrants. America provided opportunity, but lots of manual labor. This was woods. Was required to provide for family homesteads and farms. And it's these homesteads and these farms that developed the type of culture that we have today. It's still bleeding into that. Back in Pennsylvania, there's a hill called Fairmount Homes. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, in Pennsylvania, in Lancaster County. And I like to stand on that hill because I can see multiple valleys. I can see the spot where the Burkholders built the first cabin along the Conestoga Creek. And I can picture it being all woods or maybe someplace. Nobody else around, okay? This is what I was told. Because in the William Penn days, you got a big chunk of land, and he was encouraging them to settle it, cutting down trees, building houses, making fields. But if I stand on that hill today, it is scattered with little farms, chicken houses, hog barns, mills, wood shops, all sorts of enterprises. Over the years, it has prospered. Try to buy one of those plots or those farms today. They're not cheap. God has blessed our opportunity here in Pennsylvania. Now, America provided opportunity, but it required lots of manual labor, and these farms and homesteads are what has helped develop our culture. In America, we celebrate 500 years of Anabaptists, which gives us roughly 300 years here in America. Now, when I describe the Fairmount Hill, standing up on the Fairmount Hill and picturing what we grew into and what affects us, I'm sure you can find a spot here and you can see the growth that developed over the years. And that puts us here today. All that I just exposed to you or articulated to you had a lot to do with what we are living with today. So, where are we at today? I would like you to, you can jot this down, you can read this later, but in Genesis 12, verses 2 to 3, God is talking to Abraham. And this is a theme I would like to leave in this for you to think about. This is a major theme for my topic today. Abraham, God said, I'm going to bless you. Okay? Why he picked Abraham? Because Abraham was obedient. But he says this, I'm going to bless you so that you bless all the families in the world. Now, how's he ever going to do that? Well, for the sake of time, I just want to raise the, and we could say, well, when God was saying that to Abraham, he was talking about a nation, and he was talking about a nation that will bring Jesus, our Redeemer, in which we hold as our Lord today. But more than that, I want you to remember that God was going to use Abraham as a channel. He could have done all he needed to do without Abraham, but he picked Abraham to be a channel. And it wasn't about Abraham going to bless you so that you can live a pleasurable life and so that when you get old, you have a nice nest egg and you can just enjoy yourself. That was not the motive God had. The motive God had is so that I can bless you and you can bless the rest of the world and my name gets honored. Now, don't we want to be a channel for God to bless us so that we can bless others? Are we being that channel by being blessed by God that we can bless others? We are a blessed people spiritually, physically, and financially. Spiritually, I am so grateful to the Lord when I see churches thriving, and so grateful for when I see churches thriving and teaching the truth and young people rising up to take a hold of that truth and live it out. I'm just so blessed. I'm assuming that's the heart of this meeting today. Physically, I just want you, I did some research. When my ancestors came to this country, and I look over the descendant list, they dealt with birth rates. They had babies died before they were 1 year old. It was just a common thing. We live in a society today that has healthcare and healthcare abilities that really mitigates the health rate or the babies dying, not surviving. And financially, aren't we financially blessed? Now, sometimes we have a tendency to look around ourselves, compare ourselves among ourselves, and think, well, I'm not as rich as this, I'm not as wealthy as this, and I have debt to pay, and when we start focusing on those things, we lose how blessed we really are. Businesses are thriving, are profitable, most of them. There's an organization called, I don't know if I'm saying it right, Cirelia Associates, and they are monitoring the country in our country today. They claim we are living in the largest wealth transfer in history, and I'll just read here what the report says. You may have heard the term the Great Wealth Transfer. Between now and 2045, the baby boomer generation is expected to transfer more than $53 million to their heirs. Now, that's a speculation, but the baby boomers were those who were born after World War II. They are expiring. I'm probably at the tail end of the baby boomers. Maybe I'm not even a baby boomer, but that wealth that was accumulated is transpiring to the next generation across America. So, and that's been happening in your society, in your culture, for 300 years. Somebody's cleared the land, took the trees, made it profitable soil, broke down farm after farm for over generations, and And now we are living in a time when we can't all be farmers. So we use our work ethics that were passed on to us, and we have businesses. Families have more disposable income and leisure time than ever before. And I just stop with that, that families have more time than they did before. My wife did a little study for me on how much time that the housekeeper has compared to 100 years ago. An average housewife 100 years ago spent 4 hours a day, on the average, at the stove. Now, that's just at the stove. Kept the fire going, kept the water hot, made sure the baby's bottle was warmed, did cooking, did baking, and heated the water to wash. That's not talking about making clothing, maintaining clothing, keeping the house warm. And therefore, you see that the modern conveniences we have given us time, disposable time. That's not talking about agriculture, about industry, but we are in that time when we have disposable income and disposable time. AF, the AF status with the IRS was challenged here. And I'd just like to reiterate on that. Our culture as Anabaptists, conservative Anabaptists, was a culture or a preservation that AF has set out to keep alive. In 2014, the IRS came to the TQA Anabaptist Financial and said, "How is it that you have a nonprofit status with the IRS? And you do investments, you take investments, and you do loans. So what's so special that you get a nonprofit status?" So we had to make a statement, and we had an attorney do this. And I'll just briefly read what numerous pages was presented. The religious tenets of mutual aid and bearing one another's burdens are fundamental to the Anabaptist faith and have practiced by the faithful of hundreds of years in a variety of ways. A society gradually moved away from an economy dependent on agricultural production to a money-based economy. The manifestation of mutual aid changed from barn raisings and livestock exchanges to loan and brotherhood mutual aid pool programs. So the IRS realized that there's a bigger mission than just investments and loans to our people, but there's a preservation of a culture or a preservation of a faith. They took about a year. Floyd Miller from the main office told me the notes looked like they took about a year to do an audit and to check these transactions and say, is there really a lifestyle to be preserved? And they came back and said, AF is doing its job. So I'm just saying that to be grateful for the land we live in and the opportunities we have. Not that the IRS is the one that I want to leave the factor here that we use as our gauge whether we're doing a good job, the right job for the Lord. I'm not saying that. Another indication of the wealth in which we live in, and I can share this because these are facts that are close. AF manages about $1 billion today from investors that is available to the Anabaptist community to invest. In other words, there are people that actually have the cash. That's almost $1 billion that have invested it with AF and said, here, loan this out, use my money to preserve and to help grow the community, the Anabaptist community. And the borrowers come and say he's borrowing $500,000 to buy a piece of land or start a business. If he borrows that $500,000, if he wants to buy a $500,000 value, he has to have 20% of his own money in it, so that's that's 100,000 that he has to put in, and then he has to have equity or a collateral to support what he's purchasing. That's another 500,000. So those loans that are out there have collateral. So we're talking about billions with AF. Money is there, okay? And AF is one of 30 of these Anabaptist groups that are doing this. And this is only measuring these organizations. The point I'm drive home is we are wealthy. AF has been a channel through the foundation of over $50 million to charities in 2025. Here is a way, an opportunity in which you and I can be a channel to bless others. So thank God for the prosperity we have. Where are we going? Where are we going? Ezekiel 16:49 is a verse I want to quote to you. Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom: pride, fullness of bread, abundance of idleness was in her, and her daughters, neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy. That's a sad condition. God forbid that we would let ourselves become in that condition, and that's another reason I'm delighted to be sharing this with young people. Now, I don't say this all to make it sound like prosperity and wealth and time is a curse. It is only a curse if we don't channel it, a blessing God gives us, to bless others. You were born into this situation. It wasn't your choice. You didn't have any option to choose in what generation you're going to be born in. All this accumulation of wealth and all this history that brought you to this point, you were brought here. You're here for a purpose. God has a plan for just you at this time. There's not one of you here that is here by mistake. You have a plan and a purpose. And I would like for you to think that you are here at a great opportunity. And you are what God wants to use to perform great and wonderful things for His name's sake. So, I would like to go on with some scriptural concerns. The Bible is so full of warnings about people taking God's blessing for themselves. And what are we doing with the blessings we have been giving? How does prosperity affect our lifestyle? Are we being acculturated? What do you think, what goes through your head when you have extra cash, extra income, better profits? Is our excess money and time viewed as play and pleasure, or blessing the kingdom and the church, or the church and the kingdom of God? When this organization that I was referring to the great wealth, they are doing studies on that to see what impact it's going to have on America when that $53 trillion gets passed on. And one example was, that was a concern, was a couple gets X amount of dollars inherited to them. What's the mindset? In this case, the mindset, the husband and the wife talked what they're going to do with this money, and it was titled play money. Now, this is the government. They're concerned about that, because if those people get that money and they become impulsive with it and see it as play money, They're urging the population to think about when you get old and can't work. Think about healthcare costs and think about your debts. Think about your credit card debts so that those things get taken care of first. But we are living in a world that refers to the American dream. And the American dream is this: you can prosper, you have freedom, you can be yourself, you can become profitable and lay up a nice nest egg and really kick back and take it easy when you get older, when you retire. That's the American dream. Now, was that the dream God had when he blessed Abraham? Completely the opposite. So I would like to challenge us that when we get in those times and there's extra cash, extra time, extra prosperity, that what are we thinking? It starts with our thinking. Somewhere I saw a subject that Gary Miller had that said that if you are young and you like good, nice new pickups, but you can't afford it and you're not driving a new pickup, it won't be long. You'll be driving a new pickup because you had your eye on the pickups for a long time. If you like the nice new house, but you can't afford it, and you look at nice new houses, you'll focus. What you lean toward is where you'll end up at. Now, that doesn't guarantee you that, but this is where I'd like us to set our affections. Paul said, set your affections on things above, not on things of the world. Colossians 3. That's another verse you want to write down, Colossians 3. Set your affections. And to set your affections means to do something in advance. Is that my time up there? That's some, okay, I want to be sure. So before I came to Ohio from Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, now I know how to get here. I have a GPS. I set my GPS before I started, and it took me here. I got to the spot, little red dot. This is where I ended. But I did it before I came. And it's exactly sort of the way we need to do with our lives. If we want to be a blessing to the world and be a good channel for God, we need to set our affections at the start so we don't get distracted. Or acculturated. Remember that word, acculturated. Is prosperity about me or is it about God? Opportunities abound in blessing the world, communication, travel, transferring money, and giving time. There are so many opportunities today that the world never had. Our forefathers had to take 6 months of treacherous journey. The ship log on the Phoenix ship where my ancestors came on, I think started out with 600. 100 died. Normal. The captain could make money with that. What did he do with those that died? He threw them overboard. Before they went on that trip, that was the normal. Somebody's going to die. Children particularly. Women likely. Opportunities abound. Where was I going with that? Oh, yes. In my lifetime, I can call my nephews who are in different countries across the world. I can do a Zoom call. I can see their face. I can encourage them. I can be in the other side of the world in less than 12 hours. Transportation. The connection of the world we have to the world and its needs has broadened in ways we could never imagine. You can wire money just about anywhere. That opportunity exists. The need for finances and staff is increasing in Anabaptist organizations. Opportunity to serve and to bless the world. Church financial needs are always increasing. I'd like to just go back to how do we respond to peer pressure and what kind of peer or influence are we? Another thing to keep in mind is I'm sure we're all affected by this. We can't escape this, and that is we all have this inclination to lust after things. We all have this inclination to make ourselves be like the crowd or be needed, okay? The lust of the flesh. It's something that none of us was born without. We have it. And the only way to overcome that is by the power of Jesus, the power of God. And that's what keeps us from acculturating. We can try to do it ourselves, but it's hard. Jesus said, when he talked about the sower went out and some seed fell among the thorns, and it started out well, but it died out. And he told his disciples, now when the seed fell in the thorns, it's like this. Those people started out, but the cares of the world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desire for things choked it out. That's the environment that we live in. And our flesh, our fleshly desires, will lead us to that. Unless we are intentional, unless we are deliberate, making a choice to set our affections on things above. So how do we respond to peer pressure? You know, the choices you're making today, what the house you build, I could go on and on, the hobbies you have, the trips you go on, blah-de-da. People are seeing that. They're younger people. There are people in your group, your community. They have an effect. So when you think about making these choices that you spend your time and money on, remember, you're influencing people when you make that choice. It's not just you and your money. And I know sometimes you hear this phrase that I earned it, I deserve it, it's my choice, I got it cheap, I'm going to buy it. That rationale needs to be challenged if you're going to be an Abraham. How many of you have a martyr's mirror? A few of you. Okay. I just want to point this out. Thielman J. Brock, Van Brock, a Dutch Mennonite, what we would today call a conservative Dutch Mennonite, the values that we hold, was concerned about his brothers in the church, in his community, being acculturated in 1666. So he set out to compile the Martyr's Mirror to make record of those that paid with their lives for the faith, that it doesn't get lost. And the reason he did it was not just to keep a record, but I challenge you to read pages 8 to 10 in his book. And here's what it says. It makes me wonder if we're not living in the same kind of times. These were the Dutch, wealthy Dutch. These are sad times in which we live. Nay, truly, they are more dangerous now than in the time of our fathers who suffered death for the testimony of the Lord. Few will believe this because the great majority look to that which is external and corporal. And in this respect, it is now better, quieter, more comfortable. Few only look to that which is internal, the internal man, and that pertains to the soul on which everything depends. For what is a man if profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Matthew 16. These times are certainly more dangerous, for then Satan could come openly through the servants, even at noonday, or as a roaring lion, as to be so that he could be known. And it now and then was possible to hide from him. Besides, his chief design then was to destroy the body. But now he comes as in the night or in the twilight, in a strange but yet pleasing form, and in a twofold way, lies in wait to destroy the soul, partly to trample underfoot, annihilate entirely. If this were possible, the only saving Christian faith, partly to destroy the true separated Christian life, which is the outgrowth of faith. If you would read that, He would be referring to a lifestyle that they were living back in 1660. And it's a lot like our lifestyle. What I mean by the luxuries available, the time available. If that was a concern of what was written in the Martyr's Mirror, we live very similar. Let us commit ourselves. Commit our prosperity to God, to bless all the families of the world. I challenge you, and I challenge myself to want to be a blessing, but for God to trust me, to be a channel, to be a blessing in this time of prosperity. Let our light shine that the Anabaptist community blesses the world. Let's make choices for God that reflect in our lifestyle. God bless you and keep you from the evil one, and may you live victoriously.